by enemies, Lieutenant Ulibor panicked. Without direct orders, he had no idea what to do to keep his unit alive. Fortunately, Dez was there to step in and save their hides. For starters, he could sense the enemy even when he couldn't see them. Somehow he just knew where they were. He couldn't explain it, but he'd stopped trying to explain his unique talents long ago. Now he just tried to use them to his best advantage. With Dez as their guide, the Gloomwalkers were able to avoid the traps and ambushes as they slowly worked their way back to rejoin the main force. It took 3 days and nights, countless brief but deadly battles, and a seemingly endless march through enemy territory, but they made it. Through all the fighting, the unit lost only a handful of soldiers, and the troops who made it back knew they owed their lives to Dez. The story of the Gloomwalkers became a rallying point for the rest of the Sith Army, raising morale that had become dangerously low. If a single unit could survive for 3 days on its own, they reasoned, then surely 1,000 units could win the war. In the end, it took almost 2,000 units. But Kashyyyk finally fell. As leader of the heroic Gloomwalkers, Lieutenant Ulibor was given a special commendation. He never bothered to mention that Dez was really the one responsible. Still, he'd been smart enough to promote Dez to sergeant, and he knew enough to stay out of the way when things got hot.
So?
Adenar repeated. What's the word, Dez? When they finally give us the go, is this mission going to be a spice run? The lieutenant's just saying what he thinks we all want to hear. I know that, Dez. That's why I'm talking to you. I want to know what we're really in for. Dez thought about it for a few moments. They were holed up in the jungle on the edge of a narrow valley, the only route into Fasira's capital city, where the Republic Army had set up its base camp. On a nearby hill overlooking the valley was a Republic outpost. If the Sith tried to move troops through the valley, even at night, the outpost was sure to spot them. They'd signal ahead to the base camp, so their defenses would be up and fully operational long before the enemy ever reached them. The Gloomwalkers' mission was simple. Eliminate the outpost, so the rest of the army could launch a surprise attack on the Republic base camp. They had interference boxes, short-range jamming equipment they could use to keep the outpost from transmitting a signal to warn the main camp, but they'd have to hit them fast. The outpost reported each day at dawn, and if the Gloomwalkers struck too soon, the Republic would realize something was wrong when the daily report didn't come in. The timing was critical. They'd have to take them out just before the main force entered the area. That would leave a few hours to cross the valley and catch the base camp unprepared. It was doable, but only if everything was coordinated perfectly. The Gloomwalkers were in place, but the main force wasn't ready to make its move yet, and so they waited.
I'm worried,
Dez finally conceded.
Taking that outpost won't be easy. Once we get the go-ahead, there's no margin for error. We have to be perfect. If they've got any surprises waiting for us, we could be in trouble.
Adenar spit on the ground.
I knew it. You've got a bad feeling, don't you? This is Hisskor all over again.
Hisskor had been a disaster. After Kashyyyk fell, the surviving Republic soldiers fled to the neighboring world of Trandosha. 20 units of Sith troopers, including the Gloomwalkers, were sent in pursuit. They caught up to the Republic survivors on the desert plains outside the city of Hisskor. A day of savage fighting left many dead on both sides, but no definitive victor. Dez had been uneasy throughout the battle, though at the time he hadn't been able to say why. His unease had grown as night fell, and both sides retreated to opposite ends of the battlefield to regroup. The Trandoshans had struck a few hours later. The pitch-black night wasn't a problem for the reptilian Trandoshans. They could see into the infrared spectrum. They seemed to come out of nowhere, materializing from the darkness like a nightmare given substance. Unlike the Wookiees, the Trandoshans weren't allied with either side in the Galactic Civil War. The bounty hunters and mercenaries of Hiskor cut a swath of destruction through the ranks of Republic and Sith alike, not caring whom they fought, just as long as they came away with trophies from their kills. Details of the massacre were never officially released. Dez had been at the very center of the carnage, and even he could barely piece together what had happened. The attack caught the Gloomwalkers, like every other unit, completely off guard. By the time the sun rose, nearly half the Sith troops had been cut down. Dez lost a lot of friends in the slaughter. Friends he might have saved if he had paid more attention to the dark premonition he'd felt when he first set foot on that forsaken desert world. And he vowed he'd never let the Gloomwalkers get caught in a slaughter like that again. In the end, Hiskor paid a heavy price for the ambush. Reinforcements were sent in from Kashyyyk to overwhelm both the Republic forces and the Trandoshans. It took less than a week for the Sith to claim victory, and the once-proud city was sacked and razed to the ground. Many of the Trandoshans simply gave up the fight to defend their homes and offered their services to their conquerors. They were bounty hunters and mercenaries by trade and hunters by nature. They didn't care whom they were working for as long as there was a chance to do some more killing. Needless to say, the Sith had welcomed them with open arms. "This isn't going to be a repeat of Hiskor," Dez assured his nervous companion. It was true he had an uneasy feeling once again, but this time it was different. Something big was going to happen. But Dez couldn't say for sure whether it would be good or bad. "Come on, Dez," Adonar pressed. "Go talk to Ulibor. He listens to you sometimes." "And tell him what?" Adonar threw his hands up in exasperation. "I don't know. Tell him about your bad feeling. Make him get on the comm to HQ and tell them to pull us back. Or convince them to send us in. Just don't leave us sitting out here like a bunch of dead womp rats rotting in the sun." Before Dez could answer, one of the junior troopers, a young woman named Lucia, ran up and snapped off a crisp salute.
"Sergeant, Lieutenant Ulibor wants you to assemble the troops by his tent. He'll address them in 30 minutes, she said, her voice earnest and excited.
Dez flashed a smile at his friend. "I think we've finally got our orders." The soldiers stood at attention as the lieutenant and Dez reviewed the troops. As it always did, the inspection consisted of Ulibor moving up and down the ranks, nodding and giving half-muttered approvals. It was mostly for show, a chance for Ulibor to feel as if he had something to do with the success of a mission. Once they were done, the lieutenant marched to the front of the column and turned to face the troops. Dez stood alone in front of the unit, his back to them, so he could be face-to-face with his superior officer.
"Everyone here is familiar with our mission objective," Ulibor began, his voice unusually high-pitched and loud. Dez guessed he was trying to sound authoritative, but it came across as shrill.
"I'll leave the specifics of the mission to the sergeant here," he continued. "Our task is not an easy one, but the days of the Gloomwalkers getting easy jobs are long gone. I don't have much else to say. I know you're all as eager as I am to end this pointless waiting. That's why I'm happy to inform you that we've been given the order to move out. We hit the Republic outpost in 1 hour.
Horrified gasps and loud whispers of disbelief rose up from the ranks. Ulibor stepped back as if he'd been slapped. He'd obviously been expecting cheers and exultation, and was rattled by the sudden anger and lack of discipline.
"Gloomwalkers, hold!" Dez barked.
He stepped up to the lieutenant and lowered his voice.
"Sir, are you certain those were the orders? Move in 1 hour? Are you certain they didn't mean 1 hour after nightfall?"
"Are you questioning me, Sergeant?"
Ulibor snapped, making no attempt to keep his own voice down.
"No, sir. It's just that if we leave in 1 hour, it'll still be light out. They'll see us coming."
"By the time they see us, we'll already be close enough to jam their transmitters,"
the lieutenant countered.
They won't be able to signal back to the base camp.
It's not that, sir. It's the gunships. They've got 3 repulsor craft equipped with heavy repeating flash cannons. If we try to take out the outpost during the day, those things will mow us down from the sky.
It's a suicide mission!
Someone shouted out from the ranks. Ulibor's eyes became narrow slits and his face turned red.
The main army is moving out at dusk, Sergeant,
he said through tightly clenched teeth.
They want to cross the valley in darkness and hit the Republic base camp at first light.
Then there's no reason for us to move so soon, Des replied, struggling to remain calm. If they start at dusk, it's going to take at least 3 hours before they reach the valley from their current position. That gives us plenty of time to take the outpost down before they get here, even if we wait until after dark.
It's obvious you don't understand what's really going on, Sergeant.
Ulibor spoke as if arguing with a stubborn child.
The main force isn't going to start moving until after we report our mission is complete. That's why we have to move now.
It made sense. The generals wouldn't want to risk the main force until they knew for certain the valley was secure. But sending them in during the light of day guaranteed that the Gloomwalkers' casualty rate would increase 5-fold.
You have to come back to HQ and explain the situation to them, Des said. We can't take on those gunships in the air. We have to wait till they ground them for the night. You have to make them understand what we're up against.
The lieutenant acted as if he hadn't even heard him.
The generals give the orders to me, and I give them to you, he snapped. Not the other way around. The army is moving out at dusk, and that's not going to change to fit your schedule, Sergeant.
They won't have to change their plans, Des insisted. If we leave as soon as it gets dark, we'll still have that outpost down by the time they reach the valley. But sending us in now is just...
Enough! The lieutenant snapped. Quit braying like a bantha cut off from its herd! You have your orders, now follow them!
Or do you want to see what happens to soldiers who defy the superior officers?
Suddenly it was clear to Des what was really going on. Ulibor knew the order was a mistake. But he was too scared to do anything about it. The order must have come directly from one of the Dark Lords. Ulibor would rather lead his troops into a slaughter than face the wrath of a Sith Master. But Des wasn't about to let him drive the Gloomwalkers to their doom. This wasn't going to become a repeat of his score. He hesitated for only a second before slamming his fist into his lieutenant's chin, knocking him cold. There was a stunned silence from the rest of the troops as Ulibor slumped to the ground. Des quickly took away the fallen officer's weapons, then turned and pointed at a pair of the newest recruits.
You two, keep an eye on the lieutenant. Make sure he's comfortable if he wakes up, but don't let him anywhere near the comm.
To the communications officer, he said, just before dusk, send a message back to HQ telling them our mission is complete, so they can start moving the main force into the valley. That will give us 2 hours to achieve our objective before they get here. Turning to address the rest of the troops, he paused to let the gravity of his next words sink in.
What I've done here is mutiny, he said slowly. There's a chance anyone who follows me from here on in will face a court-martial when this is over. If any of you feel you can't follow my orders after what I've done here today, speak up now, and I'll surrender command to Senior Trooper Adenar for the rest of the mission.
He gazed out across the soldiers. For a second, nobody spoke. Then, as one, they all raised their fists and gave 2 light raps on their chest, just above the heart. Overwhelmed with pride, Des had to swallow hard before he could give his final order to the troops. His troops.
Gloomwalkers! Dismissed!
The ranks dispersed in groups of 2s and 3s, the soldiers whispering quietly to one another. Adenar broke away from the rest and came up to Des.
Ulibor is not going to forget this, he said quietly. What are you going to do about him?
After we take that outpost, they'll want to pin a medal on our commanding officer,
Dez replied. I'm betting he'd rather shut up and accept it than let anyone know what really happened. Adenar grunted.
Guess you got it all worked out.
Not quite, Dez admitted. I'm still not sure how we're going to take down that outpost.
Chapter 7.
The outpost was located in a clearing on the top of a plateau overlooking the valley. Under the cover of night, the Gloomwalkers had moved silently through the jungle until they had it surrounded. Dez had broken the unit up into four squads, each approaching from a different side. Each squad carried an interference box with it. They had set up and activated the eye boxes once they had closed to within half a kilometer of the base, jamming all transmissions within their perimeter. The squads had continued on to the edges of the clearing, then stopped, waiting for Dez to give them the signal to move in. With no communication among the squads, the eye boxes jammed their own equipment as well. The most reliable signal was the sound of blaster fire. As he stared across the clearing at the three repulsor craft sitting on the landing pad atop the outpost's roof, Dez felt a familiar feeling in the pit of his stomach. All soldiers felt the same thing going into battle, whether they admitted it or not. Fear. Fear of failure. Fear of dying. Fear of watching their friends die. Fear of being wounded and living out the rest of their days crippled or maimed. The fear was always there, and it would devour you if you let it. Dez knew how to turn that fear to his own advantage. Take what makes you weak and turn it into something that makes you strong. Transform the fear into anger and hate. Hatred of the enemy. Hatred of the Republic and the Jedi. The hate gave him strength, and the strength brought him victory. For Dez, the transformation came easily once the fighting started. Thanks to his abusive father, he'd been turning fear into anger and hate ever since he was a child. Maybe that was why he was such a good soldier. Maybe that was why the others looked to him for leadership. They were waiting on his signal even now, waiting for him to take the first shot. As soon as he did, they'd charge the outpost. The Gloomwalkers were outnumbered nearly 2-1. They'd need the advantage of surprise to even out the odds. But those gunships were a problem Dez hadn't anticipated. The clearing was surrounded by bright lights that illuminated everything within 100 meters of the outpost itself. And even though the repulsor craft were grounded, there was a soldier stationed in the open flatbed at the rear of each vehicle, operating the turrets. The armored walls of the flatbed rose to waist height to give the gunner some cover, and the turret itself was heavily shielded to protect it from enemy fire. From the landing pad on the roof, the gunners had a clear view of the surrounding area. If he fired that first shot, the other units would charge out into the clearing and right into a storm of heavy repeating blaster fire. They'd be torn apart like Zucca, tossed into a rancor pit. "What's the matter, Sarge?" one of the soldiers in his squad asked. It was Lucia, the junior trooper who delivered Ulibor's orders to him earlier. "What are we waiting for?" It was too late to call off the mission. The main army was already on the move. By the time Dez got back to camp to warn them, they'd be halfway through the valley. He glanced down at the young recruit and noticed the scope on her weapon. Lucia was carrying a TC-17 long-range blaster rifle. Her knuckles were white from gripping her weapon too tightly in fear and anticipation. She'd seen only minor combat duty before being assigned to the Gloomwalkers, but Dez knew she was one of the best shots in the unit. The TC-17 was only good for 12 shots before the power cell had to be switched out, but it had a range well over 300 meters. Each of the four squads had a sniper assigned to it. When the fighting began, their job was to watch the perimeter of the battle and make sure none of the Republic soldiers escaped to warn their main camp.
"See those soldiers standing in the rear of the gunships? The ones working the flash cannons?" he asked her. She nodded. "If we don't get rid of them somehow, they're going to turn our squads into turret fodder about 10 seconds after this battle begins."
She nodded again, her eyes wide and scared. Dez tried to keep his voice even and professional to calm her down.
I want you to think about this very carefully now, Trooper.
How fast do you think you could take them out from here? She hesitated.
I don't even know if I could, Sarge. Not all of them. Not from this angle. I could get a line on the first one, but as soon as he goes down, I doubt the others will stand still long enough for me to take aim. They'll probably duck down in the flatbed for cover. And even if I take the gunners out, there's half a dozen more soldiers on that roof who would jump in to take their places. I can't drop 9 targets that fast by myself, Sarge. Nobody can.
Dez bit his lip and tried to figure out an answer to the problem. There were only 3 gunships. If he could somehow get a message to the sniper in each squad and have them fire at exactly the same time, they might be able to take out the unsuspecting gunners, though they'd still have to stop the other 6 soldiers from replacing them. He cut off his own line of thought with a silent curse. It would never work. Because of the eye boxes, there was no way to get a message to the other squads in time. Taking the sniper rifle from Lucia's hands, he brought the weapon up and set his eye to the scope to get a better look at the situation. He scanned the roof quickly from side to side, noting the position of every Republic soldier. With the magnification of the scope, he could make out their features clear enough to see their lips moving as they spoke. The situation was practically hopeless. The outpost was the key to taking Fasira, and the turrets on the roof were the key to taking the outpost. But Dez was out of options and almost out of time. He felt the fear stronger than ever and took a deep breath to focus his mind. Adrenaline began to pump through his veins as he redirected the fear to give him strength and power. He lined the blaster's scope up on one of the gunners, and a red veil fell across his vision. And then he fired. He acted on instinct, moving too quickly to let his conscious thoughts get in the way. He didn't even see the first soldier drop. The scope was already moving to his next target. The second gunner had just enough time to open his eyes wide in surprise before Dez fired and moved on to the third. But she'd seen the first gunner go down and had already dropped down behind the armored walls of the gunship's flatbed for cover. Dez resisted the impulse to fire wildly and moved the scope in a tight circle, looking in vain for a clean shot. The sound of blaster fire exploded in the night, along with shouts and pounding feet as the Gloomwalkers burst from their cover and rushed the outpost. They followed their orders to the letter, charging out at the sound of the first shot. Dez knew he had only a few seconds before the turrets opened up on them and turned the clearing into a killing field. But he couldn't see the shot to take out the third gunner. He whipped the rifle around in desperation, looking for a new target on the roof. He set his sights on a soldier crouched down low beside a small canister. The soldier wasn't moving, and he'd covered his face with his hands as if shielding his vision. The blast from Dez's weapon hit him square in the chest, just as the device at the soldier's feet detonated.
"Flash canister!"
Lucia screamed, but her warning came too late. The view through the scope vanished in a brilliant white flare, temporarily blinding Dez. But with his vision gone, he could suddenly see everything clearly. He knew the position of every soldier, even as they all scrambled for cover. He could track exactly where they were and where they were going. The soldier in the third turret was training the cannons on the incoming wave of troopers. In the excitement, she'd popped her head up just slightly above the walls of the flatbed, leaving the smallest of targets exposed. Dez took her with a single shot, the bolt going in cleanly through one ear hole on her helmet and out the other. It was as if time had slowed down. Moving with a calm and deadly precision, he trained his rifle on the next target, taking her through the heart. Barely a moment later, he got the soldier beside her right between his cold blue eyes. Dez took one man in the back as he ran for the nearest gunship. Another was halfway up one of the flatbed's ladders when a bolt sliced through his thigh, knocking him off balance. He fell from the ladder, and Dez put another shot through his chest before he hit the ground. It had taken less than 3 seconds to wipe out 8 of the 9 soldiers. The last one made a run for the edge,
hoping to escape by diving off the roof on the far side of the building. Dez let him run. He could feel the terror coming in waves off his doomed prey. He savored it for as long as he could. The soldier leapt from the rooftop and seemed to hang in mid-air for a second. Dez fired his last three shots into his body, draining the weapon's power cell. He handed the weapon back to Lucia, blinking rapidly at the tears welling up as his eyes tried to soothe their damaged retinas. The effects of the flash canister were only temporary. His vision was already beginning to return, and the miraculous second sight he'd experienced was slipping away. Rubbing his eyes, he knew now was not the time to think about what had just happened. He'd eliminated the gunners, but his troops were still outnumbered. They needed him down in the hot zone, not here on the edges of the battle. "Keep an eye on that roof," he ordered Lucia. "If any of those Republic mudcrutches appear on top, take them out before they get to the gunships." She didn't reply. Her mouth was hanging open in amazement at what she'd just witnessed. Dez grabbed her by the shoulder and gave her a rough shake. "Snap out of it, trooper! You've got a job to do!" She shook her head to gather her senses and nodded, then loaded another energy cell into her weapon. Satisfied, Dez pulled out the 21D and charged across the clearing, eager to join in the battle. 3 hours later, it was all over. The mission had been a complete success. The outpost was theirs, and the Republic had no idea that thousands of Sith troopers were marching through the valley to attack them at first light. The battle itself had been short but bloody. 46 Republic soldiers dead, and 9 of Dez's own. Every time a Gloomwalker went down, part of Dez felt he'd failed somehow. But given the nature of their mission, keeping the casualties under double digits was more than he could have reasonably hoped for. Once their objective was secured, he'd left Adenar and a small contingent to hold the outpost. With Dez in the lead, the rest of the unit marched back to its base camp. Along the way, he tried to ignore the hushed whispers and furtive looks the rest of the company was giving him. Lucia had spread the word of his amazing shooting, and it was the talk of the unit. None of them was brave enough to say anything to his face, but he could hear snippets of conversation from the ranks behind him. Honestly, he couldn't blame them. Looking back, even he wasn't sure what had happened. Dez was a good marksman, but he was no sniper. Yet somehow, he'd managed to pull off a dozen impossible shots with a weapon he'd never fired before, most of them after being blinded by a flash canister. It was beyond unbelievable. It was as if, when he'd lost his vision, some mysterious power had taken over and guided his actions. It was exhilarating, but at the same time, it was terrifying. Where had this power come from, and why couldn't he control it? He was so wrapped up in his thoughts that at first he didn't even notice the strangers waiting at their base camp. It was only after they stepped up and slapped the stun cuffs on his wrists that he realized what was going on. "Welcome back, Sergeant." Ulibor's voice was filled with bile. Dez glanced around. A dozen enforcers, the military security of the Sith Army, were standing with weapons drawn. Ulibor stood behind them, a deep bruise on his face where Dez had struck him. In the background, Dez could see the two junior recruits he'd left in charge of Ulibor. They were staring down at the ground, embarrassed and ashamed. "Did you really think those raw recruits would keep their commanding officer trussed up like some kind of prisoner?" Ulibor taunted him from behind the protective wall of armed guards. "Did you really believe they would follow you in your madness?" "That madness saved our lives," Lucia shouted. Dez held up his shackled hands to silence her. This situation could get out of hand far too easily. When nothing else happened, the lieutenant seemed to gain some courage. He stepped out from behind the protective wall of enforcers and over to Dez. "I warned you about disobeying orders," he sneered. "Now, you get to see firsthand how the Brotherhood of Darkness deals with mutinous soldiers."
A few of the Gloomwalkers began to reach slowly for their weapons, but Dez shook his head and they froze. The enforcers already had their blasters drawn and weren't afraid to use them. The troopers wouldn't manage to get off even a single shot.
"What's the matter, Sergeant?"
Ulibor pressed, drawing closer to his defeated enemy. Too close.
"Nothing to say."
Dez knew he could kill the lieutenant with one quick move. The enforcers would take him out, but at least Ulibor would go with him. Every fiber of his being wanted to lash out and end both their lives in an orgy of blood and blaster fire. But he managed to fight the impulse. There was no point in throwing his life away. A court-martial would likely end in a death sentence, but at least, if he went to trial, he'd have a chance. Ulibor stepped up and slapped him once across the face, then spit on his boots and stepped back.
"Take him away,"
he said to the enforcers, turning his back on Dez. As Dez was taken away, he couldn't help but see the look in the eyes of Lucia and the troopers whose lives he'd saved only hours ago. He had a feeling the next time the unit went into combat, Ulibor would suffer an unfortunate and fatal accident. That realization brought the hint of a smile to his lips. The enforcers marched him through the jungle for hours, weapons drawn and trained on him the entire time. They only lowered them when they reached the sentries on the perimeter of the main Sith camp.
"Prisoner for a court-martial," one of the enforcers said flatly. "Go tell Lord Kopesh."
One of the sentries saluted and ran off. They marched Dez through the camp toward the brig. He saw recognition in the eyes of many of the soldiers. With his height and bald head, he was an imposing figure, and many of the troops had heard of his exploits. Seeing a formerly ideal soldier being brought before a court-martial was sure to leave an impression. They reached the camp's makeshift prison, a small containment field over a 3x3x3 meter pit that served as a holding area for captured spies and POWs. The enforcers had relieved him of his weapons when they first took him into custody. Now they did a more thorough search and stripped him of all other personal effects. Then they shut down the containment field and roughly tossed him in, not even bothering to release his cuffs. He landed awkwardly on the hard ground at the bottom of the hole. As he struggled to his feet, he heard an unmistakable hum as the field was activated once again, sealing him in. The pit was empty, other than Dez himself. The Sith didn't tend to keep prisoners around for long. He began to wonder if he'd made a serious mistake. He'd hoped his past service might buy him some leniency at his trial, but now he realized his reputation might actually work against him. The Sith Masters weren't known for their tolerance or their mercy. He'd defied a direct order. There was a good chance they'd decide to make a harsh example of him. He couldn't say how long they'd left him at the bottom of the pit. After a while, he fell asleep, exhausted by the battle and the forced march. He slipped in and out of consciousness. At one point, it was light outside his prison, and he knew day must have come. The next time he came to, it was dark again. They hadn't fed him yet. His stomach was growling in protest as it gnawed away at itself. His throat was parched and dry. His tongue felt as if it had swollen up large enough to choke him. Despite this, there was a slowly increasing pressure on his bladder. But he didn't want to relieve himself. The pit stank enough already. Maybe they were just going to leave him here to die a slow and lonely death. Given the rumors he'd heard of Sith torture, he'd almost hoped that was the case. But he hadn't given up. Not yet. When he heard the sound of approaching footsteps, he scrambled to his feet and stood straight and tall, even though his hands were still cuffed in front of him. Through the containment field, he could just make out the blurred forms of several guards standing on the edge of the pit, along with another figure, wearing a heavy dark cloak.
"Take him to my ship,"
the cloaked figure said in a deep, rasping voice.
"I will deal with this one on Korriban."
Chapter 8. Dez never got a clear look at the man who'd ordered his transfer.
By the time they'd gotten him out of the pit, the cloaked figure had vanished. They gave him food and water, then let him clean and refresh himself. Though he was freed from the cuffs, he was still under heavy guard as he boarded a small transport ship heading for Korriban. Nobody spoke to him on the trip, and Dez didn't know what was going on. But at least he wasn't cuffed anymore. He chose to take that as a good sign. They arrived in the middle of the day. He'd expected them to touch down at Dreshta, the only city in the dark and forbidding world. Instead, the ship landed at a starport built atop an ancient temple overlooking a desolate valley. A chill wind blew across the landing pad as he disembarked, but it didn't bother Dez. After the stale air of the pit, any breeze felt good. He felt a shiver go down his spine as his foot touched Korriban's surface. He'd heard that this had once been a place of great power, though now only the merest shadows remained. There was an undercurrent of malice here. He'd felt it as soon as the transport had entered the bleak planet's atmosphere. From this vantage point, he could make out other temples scattered across the world's desert surface. Even at this distance, he could perceive the eroded rock and crumbling stone of the once grand entrances. Beyond the valley, the city of Dreshta was a mere speck on the horizon. He was met on the landing pad by a hooded figure. He could tell right away this wasn't the same one who had come to him in the pit. This person had neither the size nor the impressive bearing of his liberator. Even through the containment field, Dez had been able to sense his commanding presence. This figure, which Dez now thought to be female, motioned for him to follow. Silently, she led him down a flight of stone steps and into the temple itself. They crossed a landing and descended another set of stairs, then repeated the pattern, working their way level by level down from the temple's apex to the ground below. There were doors and passages leading off from each landing, and Dez could hear snippets of sound and conversation echoing from them, though he could never quite tell what was being said. She didn't speak, and Dez knew better than to break the silence himself. Technically, he was still a prisoner. For all he knew, she was leading him to his court-martial. He wasn't about to make things worse by asking foolish questions. When they reached the bottom of the building, she led him to a stone archway with yet another flight of stairs. These were different, however. They were narrow and dark, and wound their way down until they vanished from sight deep in the bowels of the ground. Without a word, his guide handed him a torch she'd taken from a bracket on the wall, and then stepped aside. Wondering what was going on, Dez made his way carefully down the steep staircase. He couldn't say how much deeper he went. It was difficult to maintain any perspective in the narrow confines of the stairwell. After several minutes, he reached the bottom, only to find a long hallway stretching out before him. At the end of the hallway, he encountered a single room. The room was dark and filled with shadow. Only a few torches sputtered on the stone wall, their dying flames barely able to pierce the gloom. Dez paused at the threshold, letting his eyes adjust. He could just make out a dim figure inside. It beckoned to him.
"Come forward."
He felt a chill, though the room was far from cold. The air itself was electric, filled with a power he could actually feel. He was surprised that he didn't feel afraid. He recognized what he felt as the chill of anticipation. As Dez moved deeper into the room, the features of the shrouded figure became clear, revealing himself to be a Twi'lek. Even under the loose-fitting robe he wore, Dez could see he was thick and heavyset. He stood nearly 2 meters tall, easily the largest Twi'lek Dez had ever met, though not quite as large as Dez himself. His leku wound down his broad chest and wrapped back up around his muscular neck and shoulders. His eyes glowed orange beneath his brow, mirroring the flickering torches. He smiled, revealing the sharp, pointed teeth common to his species.
"I am Lord Kopej of the Sith," he said.
At that moment, Dez knew, without a doubt, this was the cloaked one who had come to him in the pit, and he gave a slight bow of his head in acknowledgement.
I am to be your inquisitor,
Lord Corpesh explained, his voice showing no emotion.
I alone will determine your fate. Rest assured, my judgment will be final.
Dez nodded again. The Twi'lek fixed his burning orange eyes on Dez.
You are no friend of the Jedi or their Republic.
It wasn't a question, but Dez felt compelled to answer anyway.
What have they ever done for me? Exactly,
Corpesh said with a cruel smile.
I understand you have fought many battles against the Republic forces. Your fellow troopers speak highly of you. The Sith have need of men like you if we are to win this war.
He paused.
You were a model soldier. Until you disobeyed a direct order. The order was a mistake,
Dez said. His throat had grown so dry and tight that he had trouble getting the words out.
Why did you refuse to attack the outpost during the day? Are you a coward?
A coward wouldn't have completed the mission,
Dez replied sharply, stung by the accusation.
Corpesh tilted his head to the side and waited.
Attacking in the daylight was a tactical mistake,
Dez continued, trying to press his point.
Ulabar should have relayed that information back to command, but he was too scared.
Ulabar was the coward, not me. He would rather risk death at the hands of the Republic than face the Brotherhood of Darkness. I prefer not to throw my life away needlessly. I can see that from your service record,
Corpesh said.
Kashyyyk, Trandoshan, Fasira. If these reports are accurate, you have performed incredible feats during your time with the Gloomwalkers. Feats some would claim to be impossible.
Dez bristled at the implication.
The reports are accurate,
he replied.
I have no doubt that they are.
Corpesh either hadn't noticed or didn't care about the tone of Dez's reply.
Do you know why I brought you to Korriban?
Dez was beginning to realize that this wasn't really a court-martial after all. It was some kind of test, though for what he still wasn't sure.
I feel I've been chosen for something.
Corpesh gave him another sinister smile.
Good. Your mind works quickly. What do you know of the Force?
Not much, Dez admitted with a shrug. It's something the Jedi believe in, some great power that's supposed to be just floating out there in the universe somewhere.
And what do you know of the Jedi?
I know they believe themselves to be guardians of the Republic,
Dez replied, making no attempt to hide his contempt.
I know they wield great influence in the Senate. I know many believe they have mystical powers.
And the Brotherhood of Darkness.
Dez considered his words more carefully this time.
You are the leaders of our army and the sworn enemy of the Jedi. Many believe that you, like them, have unnatural abilities.
But you do not.
Dez hesitated, struggling to come up with the answer he thought Corpesh wanted to hear. In the end, he couldn't figure out what his inquisitor was looking for, so he simply told the truth.
I believe most of the stories are greatly exaggerated.
Corpesh nodded.
A common enough belief. Those who do not understand the ways of the Force regard such tales as myth or legend. But the Force is real, and those who wield it have power you can't even imagine. You've seen many battles, but you have not experienced the real war. While troops vie for control of worlds and moons, the Jedi and Sith Masters seek to destroy each other. We are being driven toward an inevitable and final confrontation. The faction that survives, Sith or Jedi, will determine the fate of the galaxy for the next 1,000 years. True victory in this war will not come through armies, but through the Brotherhood of Darkness. Our greatest weapon is the Force, and those individuals who have the power to command it. Individuals like you.
He paused to let his words sink in before continuing.
You are special, Dez. You have many remarkable talents. These talents are manifestations of the Force, and they have served you well as a soldier. But you have only scratched the surface of your gift. The Force is real. It exists all around us. You can feel the power of it in this room. Can you sense it?
Dez hesitated only a moment before nodding.
I feel it. Hot, like a fire, waiting to explode.
The power of the dark side. The heat of passion and emotion. I can feel it in you as well. Burning beneath the surface. Burning like your anger. It makes you strong.
Kopesh closed his eyes and tilted his head back, as if basking in the heat. The tips of his head tails twitched ever so slightly. The only sound was the faint crackle of flame from the torches. A bead of sweat rolled down the crown of Dez's bare scalp and along the back of his neck. He didn't wipe it away, though he did shift his feet uncomfortably as it trickled its way between his shoulder blades. The slight movement seemed to snap the Twi'lek out of his trance. He didn't speak again for several seconds, but he studied Dez intently with his piercing gaze.
You have touched the Force in the past, but your abilities are an insignificant speck beside the power of a true Sith Master.
He finally said,
There is great potential in you. If you stay here on Korriban, we can teach you to unleash it.
Dez was speechless.
You would no longer be a trooper on the front lines,
Kopesh continued.
If you accept my offer, that part of your life is over. You will be trained in the ways of the dark side. You will become one of the Brotherhood of Darkness, and you will not return to the Gloom Walkers.
Dez felt his heart pounding, his head swimming. As long as he could remember, he'd known he was special because of his unique talents. And now, he was being told that his abilities were nothing compared with what he could really accomplish. Still, part of him balked at the idea of leaving his unit without even having a chance to say goodbye. He considered Adenar, Lucia, and the others as more than just fellow soldiers. They were his friends. Could he really abandon them like this, even for the chance to join the Sith Masters? He recalled one of the last things Groshek had ever said to him.
Don't count on others for help. In the end, each of us is in this alone. The survivors are those who know how to look out for themselves.
Everything he'd had, he'd given to his unit. He'd saved their lives too many times to count. And in the end, when the enforcers had come to take him away, they'd been powerless to save him. They would have tried if he'd let them, but they would have failed. Dez realized the truth. His unit, his friends, could do nothing for him now. He could rely only on himself, like always. He'd be a fool to turn this opportunity down.
I am honored, Master Kopesh, and I gratefully accept your offer. The way of the Sith is not for the weak,
the big Twi'lek warned.
Those who falter will be left behind.
There was something ominous in his tone.
I won't be left behind, Dez replied, unfazed. That remains to be seen,
Kopesh noted.
Then he added, This is a new beginning for you, Dez. A new life. Many of the students who come here take a new name for themselves. They leave their old life behind.
Dez had no desire to hang on to any part of his old life. An abusive father, the brutality of working the mines in Apatros. He had been seeking a new life for as long as he could remember. The Gloomwalkers had offered an escape, but it had been a temporary one. Now, he had a chance to leave his past behind forever. All he had to do was embrace the Brotherhood of Darkness and its teachings. And yet, for reasons he couldn't explain, he felt the cold grip of fear closing in on him. The fear made him hesitate.
"Do you wish to choose a new name for yourself, Dez?"
Kopej asked, possibly sensing his reluctance.
"Do you wish to be reborn?"
Dez nodded.
Kopej smiled once more. "And by what name shall we call you now?"
The fear would not stop him. He would seize the fear, transform it, and make it his own. He would take what had once made him weak and use it to make himself strong.
"My name is Bane. Bane of the Sith."
Lord Cordis, exalted master of the Sith Academy on Korriban, scratched gently at his chin with long, talon-like fingers.
"The student you have brought me, this Bane, has never been trained in the ways of the Force."
Kopej shook his head and twitched his leku ever so slightly in annoyance.
"As I told you before, Cordis, he grew up on Apatros, a world controlled by the Oro Company.
Yet you managed to find this young man and bring him here to the Academy. It seems almost too convenient,"
the heavyset Twi'lek snarled.
"This is not a plot against you, Cordis. That is no longer our way. We are a brotherhood now, remember? You are too suspicious."
Cordis laughed.
"Not suspicious. Cautious. It has helped me to maintain my position here among so many powerful and ambitious young Sith. He is as powerful as any of them,"
Kopej insisted.
"But he is also older. We prefer to find our students when they are younger and more malleable."
"Now you sound like a Jedi,"
Kopej sneered.
"They seek younger and younger pupils, hoping to find them pure and innocent. In time, they will refuse any who are not infants.
We must be quick to pluck those they leave behind. Besides,"
he continued,
"Bane is too strong to simply pass over, even for the Jedi. We are lucky we found him before they did."
"Yes, lucky,"
Cordis echoed, his voice dripping with sarcasm.
"His arrival here seems to be an incredible turn of many fortuitous events. Quite lucky indeed."
"Some might see it that way,"
Kopej admitted.
"Others might see it as something more. Destiny, perhaps."
There was silence while Cordis considered his longtime rival's words.
"The other acolytes have been training for many years. He will be far behind,"
he said at last.
"He will catch up, if given the chance,"
Kopej insisted.
"And I wonder, will the others give him that chance? Not if they're smart. I'm afraid we may simply be throwing away one of Lord Khan's best troopers."
"We both know the Jedi won't be defeated by soldiers,"
Kopej snapped.
"I'd gladly trade 1,000 of our best troopers for even one Sith Master."
Cordis seemed taken aback by his passionate reaction.
"He's that strong, is he, this Bane?"
Kopej nodded.
"I think he might be the one we've been searching for. He could be the Sithari."
"Before he can claim that title,"
Cordis said with a cunning smile,
"he'll have to survive his training."
Part 2. Chapter 9.
Peace is a lie. There is only passion. Through passion I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. Through power, I gain victory. Through victory,
My chains are broken. Kopej was gone, rejoining Khan's army and the war being waged against the Jedi and the Republic. Bane had remained behind at the Sith Academy on Korriban to learn the ways of the Sith. His first lesson began the next morning, at the feet of Lord Cordis himself. The tenets of the Sith are more than just words to be memorized, the master of the academy explained to his newest apprentice. Learn them. Understand them. They will lead you to the true power of the Force, the power of the dark side. Cordis was taller than Kopej, taller even than Bane. He was very thin and clad in a black, loose-fitting robe with the hood drawn back to fall across his shoulders. He might have been human, but something about his appearance seemed off. His skin was an unnatural, chalky hue, made even more obvious by the glittering gems encrusting the many rings on his long fingers. His eyes were dark and sunken. His teeth were sharp and pointed, and his fingernails were curved and wicked talons. Bane knelt before him, similarly clad in a dark robe with the hood drawn back. Earlier this morning, he'd heard the code of the Sith for the first time, and the words were still fresh and mysterious. They swirled through the undercurrents of his mind, occasionally bubbling up into his conscious thoughts as he tried to absorb the deeper meaning behind them. Peace is a lie. There is only passion. He knew the first tenet to be true, at least. His entire life was proof of that.
Kopej tells me you come to us as a raw apprentice,
Cordis noted.
He says you have never been trained in the ways of the Force.
I'm a quick learner, Bane assured him.
Yes, and strong in the power of the dark side. But the same can be said of all who come here.
Not sure how to respond, Bane decided the wisest course of action was to stay silent.
What do you know of this academy?
Cordis finally asked.
Students here are taught to use the Force. They're taught the secrets of the dark side by you and the other Sith Lords.
After a brief hesitation, he added,
And I know there are many other academies like this one.
No,
Cordis corrected.
Not like this one. It is true we have other training facilities spread across our ever-growing empire, places where individuals with promise are taught to control and use their power, but each facility is unique, and where individual students are sent depends on how much potential we see in them. Those with a noticeable but limited ability are sent to Honegger, Gentis, or Gamor to become Sith warriors or marauders. There they are taught to channel their emotions into mindless rage and battle fury. The power of the dark side transforms them into ravaging beasts of death and destruction to be unleashed against our enemies.
Through passion, I gain strength, Bane thought. But when he spoke, he said,
Brute strength alone is not enough to bring down the Republic.
True,
Cordis agreed. From the tone of his voice, Bane knew he had said what his master wanted to hear.
Those with greater ability are sent to worlds that have allied with our cause to destroy the Republic. Ryloth, Umbara, Nar Shaddaa. These students become creatures of shadow, learning to use the dark side for secrecy, deception, and manipulation. Those who survive the training become unstoppable assassins, capable of drawing on the dark side to kill their targets without ever moving a muscle.
Yet even they are no match for the Jedi,
Bane added, thinking he understood the direction the lesson was taking.
Precisely,
his master agreed.
The academies on Dathomir and Iridonia are most similar to the one here. Their apprentices study under Sith masters. Those who succeed in their training become the adepts and acolytes who swell the ranks of our armies. They are the counterparts to the Jedi Knights who stand in the way of our ultimate conquest. But even as the Jedi Knights must answer to the Jedi Masters, so must the Adepts and Acolytes answer to the Sith Lords.